This is the Jack Stockwell radio program. To contact Jack from Salt Lake City, dial 254-5855. And now the consummate voice of sense and sensibility himself, Jack Stockwell.
Okay, good morning, everybody. It's 7:06 a.m. here in Salt Lake City on the good old Voice of Utah, the Voice of Freedom, and once in a while, the voice of some dissent. I'm Dale Williams. I'm going to be with you here this morning in place of Jack Stockwell, and Jack will be back Monday. It's our privilege this morning to have with us Congressman Ron Paul from the 14th District in Texas. Congressman there since 1979, also a congressperson, congressman from 76 to 79 in the 22nd District of Texas. You'll find that we tried to get a hold of Ron Paul for a couple of reasons. One is that back on the 12th of March, if I have my dates correct, he declared his candidacy for the presidency of the United States, but mostly because he's a guy who doesn't play games. I'm going to give you a little bit of a taste of that, and then we'll bring the congressman right on. A couple of excerpts from a speech from March 20th before the U.S. House of Representatives. Selected excerpts here. The congressman said, "The constant refrain that bringing our troops home would demonstrate a lack of support for them must be one of the most amazing distortions ever foisted on the American public. We're so concerned about saving face, but whose face are we saving? A sensible policy would save American lives and follow the rules laid out for Congress in the Constitution and avoid wars that have no purpose. The claim that it's unpatriotic to oppose spending more money in Iraq must be laid to rest as fraudulent. We should pass a resolution that expresses congressional opposition to any more undeclared, unconstitutional, unnecessary, preemptive wars. We should be building a consensus for the future that makes it easier to end our current troubles in Iraq. It's amazing to me that this Congress is more intimidated by political propagandists and special interests than the American electorate who sent a loud, clear message about the war in November. The large majority of Americans now wants us out of Iraq, and as we bleed financially, the Constitution and the liberties it's supposed to protect for which it is claimed our soldiers are dying in faraway places. Only with the complicity of Congress have we become a nation of preemptive war, secret military tribunals, torture, rejection of habeas corpus, warrantless searches, undue government secrecy, extraordinary renditions, and uncontrollable spying on the American people. The greatest danger we face is ourselves. What we are doing in the name of providing security for people made fearful by distortions of facts. Fighting over there has nothing to do with preserving our freedoms at home. More likely the opposite is true." And Congressman Paul, I appreciate your forbearance as I read that quote. The reason I found it's just so electrifying to read that last night because we're a little confused about the war here in the state of Utah. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
What can you tell us, Congressman Paul, about your motivations for running for president, and how do you think this is going to play, your staunch opposition to the war?
Well, probably what you read there expresses my reason for running as much as anything. It's part of a bigger picture of big government and less individual liberty, but this is a major source of our problem, and that is our foreign policy. And it's not only dealing with Iraq, but, over 50, 60, 70 years, we have just drifted away from having a non-interventionist foreign policy to one where we believe we are the policemen of the world and that we should be involved throughout. And instead of it getting a little bit better for us after the Cold War was over, it actually gotten worse. People said, well, we're the only ones, so we have more responsibilities. And so we haven't backed off now. Now we as a nation spend more money than everybody else put together on weaponry. We expect everybody to toe the line. And I think it's tragic, and I think the American people are sick and tired of it all, but I don't think they quite understand exactly what the policy is that they'd have to reject. Some would say, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. We probably ought to quit, but we better go get the Iranians. Some of them are wanting to back off on Iraq, but they're ready to go after Iran. So it's an overall policy that I'm interested in, and I think it's very simply outlined for us in the Constitution that we just don't have the authority to police the world.
You know, Congressman Paul, I noticed that you were one of a grand total of eight congressmen in our federal legislature, that is, that opposed the National ID Act. And I can't help but think that's probably, you know, 8 to 435, that's probably about the ratio that you would face as a constitutionalist president. I mean, that would be quite a logjam you would face as a president of voting against this thing, this machine that you're in such opposition to right now.
But so much of the bad legislation was pushed by the president onto the Congress, and the Congress capitulated. So if you had less of that type of leadership that was pushing us in the wrong direction, maybe we would have a lot less of the legislation. And then, of course, when the legislation is very, very bad, you should just veto it. You shouldn't, you know, put up with it. But you're also making a very good point. I think the sentiment is pretty questionable about how ready the American people are for less government. I think on times they're ready in generalities, but not in specifics. They'll say, yeah, that sounds real good, I like that, but in my case, I need my subsidy, you know. I'm in the corn belt, I need corn subsidies. You know, there's always some exception to the rule, and therefore, once you make one exception, there's not much left to the rule of law, and I, quite frankly, don't think there's that much left to the Constitution.
I've heard it called a dead letter, and that it has been for a long time. But that bully pulpit, that could be a real revitalizing element. If we had, you know, I'm thinking just the inverse of what we have now, where we have a president that is sort of the puppet, the mouthpiece for a cabal that really wants to take the last signs of life out of the Constitution.
Yeah, I think the American people traditionally have liked a strong president. And I keep trying to think about that, but, you know, quite frankly, I don't want to run people's lives, and I don't want to run the economy, and I don't want to police the world. But it still is attractive to think that a person could be strong. But I think it's, in what way would you be strong? Would you be strong in using power or strong in resisting power and leading people away from bad ideas and from doing things that people accept traditionally? So I think that just because I would not want to tell you everything you have to do with your personal life and believe that I could run the economy, that this would be a weak position. Matter of fact, I think it might take more strength resisting this power these days than to go along with it.
You know, I was on a little website by the name of Small Government, or Small Government Times, smallgovtimes.com, Congressman, and they said the following. Paul's Presidential Exploratory Committee, formed earlier this year, stirred up his enormous grassroots support from heartland voters, small government believers, and fed-up Republicans who believe current GOP candidates offer no real solutions to an expanding federal government and refuse to tackle America's important issues such as illegal immigration and erosion of American civil liberties. Without embarrassing you, can I ask, do you know what kind of have some sense of the reaction, just the news that you'd be on with us for 25 minutes among this freedom movement community we have within Utah? It's amazing. I don't know how you've managed it, but there is tremendous hope vested in you, Congressman, and does that burden you, or does it enliven you a little bit?
Well, the truth is that I'm still a little bit confused by it, because I hear these stories, and we do get a lot of responses, but when you get down to the bottom line, which is really what counts, we're not true competitors. I mean, the establishment candidates have $7,500 million, you know. So I don't want to pretend. Yet at the same time, I hear these stories, and the truth is I don't know if anybody knows the exact numbers out there of the people who are willing to support a candidate like myself. And I guess that's what we're involved in right now, and trying to find out, are the numbers there? Will they respond? Will they be volunteers? Will they send some money? And obviously we can't compete on the money basis, but fortunately in this day and age with the Internet, we might just be able to compete with communications in that manner. So therefore, I am not overly optimistic, but a bit skeptical, but also hopeful that there are numbers out there, because certainly an individual can't do this by himself. This has to be done as a reflection of a movement that's been going on for more than a year or two. Mm-hmm. And I think the freedom movement's been going on pretty solidly for 30 years, because when I first started in the 70s, nobody had the vaguest idea what was going on, but a lot of changes have occurred here in the last 10, 15 years.
Well, Congressman Paul, I also have to ask you, the worst case scenario, I suppose, which is that the Ron Pauls of this world fade along with the rest of us in the freedom movement, and we have the template of the Security Prosperity Partnership and the North American Union. We have that thing marching forward. You know what I'm talking about, I'm sure, that this idea that the government is rolling forward, the bureaucratic class has an agenda, and it's at this point just about disconnected from representative government. Do you have any advice for us, because we're not here very long with you this morning, if we don't hear from you on the national scene again in this context, do you have any idea how we ought to proceed?
I think the most important thing is to become aware of what's happening. You just mentioned a couple of issues there about the North American Union. And in Washington, they don't talk about it. Quite frankly, not many members know about it, nor do they care about it.
Astounding.
Yet, there's a lot of people now that are starting to stir. As a matter of fact, there were a few elections in this last go-around that were determined with this issue. So the people are way ahead of the Congress, but we're moving in that direction. And I guess many members, either they don't care or they don't understand, or they really do believe in internationalism. There's a bunch that do. They believe sincerely in internationalism as well as we do on individual sovereignty. So I think becoming informed on these issues and then doing as much as they can to spread this message. And fortunately, people who are sophisticated enough with the Internet are able to gather up a lot of support in this manner. So whether it's supporting a candidacy like myself or some other local official or local race, I think it's important to give it a try. If we don't try now, we can't complain quite as much later on. But it is a tough fight.
We're coming up to one of our hard breaks, Congressman. I know you want to be on your way at about 25 minutes after the hour. That'll give us just a couple minutes coming out of the break to continue to speak with you. While we come up to the break, I think folks would like to know, because we at KTalk, we talk a lot about the North American Union, the inexorable march towards the union on this continent. Besides yourself and maybe as many congressmen as I could count on one hand, is there any resistance, sort of native resistance within our legislature to this thing at all?
You mean the state legislatures?
No, I mean the federal legislature.
No, less at the federal, but I think some of the states are waking up and passing resolutions. I mean, it's moving quickly in Texas, and yet there's been a few votes down there where people are starting to become aware of how many millions of acres may be confiscated through eminent domain, so that gets their attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hope that we do the job to wake the people up. And some people say, well, no, this is just about improving our highways, and things like that.
Mm.
But,
maybe federalism, whether the rise of the states, maybe that's re-embracing their sovereignty. Maybe that's the hope that we can hold out for a little bit. Here we are with our remaining moments with Congressman Ron Paul. Congressman Paul, we know that your expertise is in finance. I have a question on that, but before we run out of time, let's make sure folks know how to support the Paul campaign.
Best way is to get hold of our website, Ron Paul 2008.
Okay, fair enough. There's a lot of concern being expressed about the fact that Mr. Bernanke has elected not to report the M3, the monetary product of the government. Do you have any comment on that this morning?
Yeah, I did. Matter of fact, he was before the Joint Economic Committee this week, which I sat and I asked him that question again. But he totally ignores it. He just shakes his head but never responds, because this week I was able to quote a private source that reports M3, and it's going up at 11% rate.
Oh my.
That's tremendous inflation, monetary inflation, which is the source of the trouble. But they, and I was trying to make the point that he, the Federal Reserve, and he himself are responsible for these bubbles, and that yet the most important information is that of M3, and we're denied that. At the same time, they reassure us and they tell us, well, there's no inflation, and yet they exclude, you know, the cost of housing. Yet there was a housing bubble that's unwinding right now, so they're saying there's no inflation, housing prices are going up 15 or 20% a year, money supply isn't a problem because we don't report it any longer, and sometimes you just wonder why the financial markets don't seem to really care.
Yeah, not until the other shoe drops.
Right.
Well, Dr. Paul, it has been a privilege. I hope you'll come back and visit us on K-Talk. I know you have to go downtown now and do another radio interview. We just say God bless and Godspeed.
Thank you very much. Nice to be with you.
All right. Take care. And that was Congressman Ron Paul. We'll try to get him back on the Jack Stockwell radio program. And as things progress and we go closer and closer to that so-called election, you know, it is amazing the response in the grassroots to Congressman Ron Paul's candidacy, the excitement it causes, because he's a guy who nobody that I know of can find a moment of compromise about with respect to defending the Constitution and militating within that very corrupt body, our federal legislature, for the reinstitution of a strict constructionist interpretation and application of the Constitution of the United States. We've got some callers coming in. There are lines open. I apologize for not being able to give you a little exposure as listeners, as callers, I should say, to Congressman Paul. That's for another day when we have him for a little bit longer. In the meantime, let's go to calls. It's 254-5855. In Salt Lake City, there's one line open. Utah County would be 470-5855. You'll want to stay with us. We're going to have a lively repartee here, a little live local two-way talk. We're going to talk about the visit of the Vice President down South Way coming up here. Looks like a break is coming up, but let's have Daryl get started, and we'll hold him over and continue through over the break. Hi, Daryl.
Morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that Ron Paul's talking about the North American Union, because Lynn Hatch responded to a letter of mine on his stationery, his signature, and he said that the so-called, this is the exact words, the so-called...
Let's hold that pose. Daryl, I did it to you again. That's what I'm good at. Ah, but there's the music. We do have guidelines here on the radio. Okay, let's do a little business and come back and talk to Daryl. Oh, that name Orrin Hatch has come up already this morning. That's awful.
Jack Stockwell on K-Talk.
Like government. Okay, Daryl, now you had some kind of interaction with the august presence, I take it.
Yes, I sent a letter to Orrin Hatch probably in December, and on January 14th he replied on his stationery. He said, thank you for your letter expressing your concerns about the so-called North American Union. And he said, I'm skipping a few lines here, but so I've heard from many Utahns concerned about rumors they have been hearing about the various free trade and security agreements are being written to force the United States into a European style of government. I've come to the conclusion these rumors are untrue.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
And then I'm
keeping a straight face, Daryl. Go ahead.
Skipping another paragraph, that means, you know, blah, blah. Now, the last line says, in 3 decades of Senate service, I have never violated my oath to uphold and protect the Constitution.
Okay, there's even limits to my discipline there. Can we all have a good belly laugh? Belly laugh, all right. Are you going to read us this whole thing, Daryl, or do you want to comment on it?
I just read you the most important parts,
right,
where he said he's come to the conclusion that the rumors about North American Union are untrue. That's basically what he's saying. And this is just January the 14th.
Well, you know, Daryl, this thing is I have been on a couple of different websites. This thing is a big hairy monster. The infrastructure aspect of this, it's a little bit like watching a large superstate like the Soviet Union or China or the United States getting ready for general war. There's a lot of, it's a massive industrial infrastructure development. It isn't just the NAFTA highway, the 1,200-foot wide ribbon that they're going to cut right through the middle of our country to bring in Mexican trucks unfettered. It's another giant highway just a little to the left of that, and then another one over by the coast, farther left yet, farther west. If we're going to be fools, at least it's better to know you're a fool, isn't it? I mean, this thing is going forward as if there is no legislature, no connection. I think that's what my reference with Congressman Paul was about on the SPP, is that, gosh, it's a great evidence for those who don't want to believe that our republic isn't working. It's a great piece of evidence to look at and shake your tree a little bit.
I couldn't believe when Paul said that most of the congressmen do not know about the North American Union. Is that possible that they don't know?
I would recommend that to anybody to listen to the interview on America Freedom from Freedom to Fascism, Aaron Russo's America from Freedom to Fascism, where he interviews Ron Paul, and he says things like that on that documentary, as well as other stunning things that we didn't really get a chance to get into today. But let me tell you, the congressman has about as bleak an outlook as anybody you'd ever hear on K-Talk, any of the dissenting type folks on K-Talk. The difference is it's a little harder to call him a conspiranoid, but they don't know or care about a whole bunch of things. He talks about the money supply, about the fact that nobody knows how much money or cares what's going on with the gold reserve. These people are employees, Daryl, you know what I'm saying? They are less and less. I mean, they can be ciphers and still function pretty well in that job as congressman. Better, even.
Hey, a show I'd like you to do sometime. Do you have the DVD on hacking or the video on hacking democracy?
I don't think so.
Oh, this is the most important video I think ever made.
Mm-hmm.
It shows exactly how they scammed the election with the computerized voting machines. In fact, some of the election officials were getting word that the machines were being manipulated and hacked to change the vote. So they started doing some investigation, and they discovered exactly how they did it. So all of the thousands of machines around the country are okay, but the way they do this is with the memory card that they insert into the machine to count the votes. The memory card is a programmable card, and if you go to the main machine that counts the votes from all thousands of machines all over the country that we paid hundreds of millions of dollars for,
mm-hmm.
The main machine, they can change the vote any way they want very easily, using the memory cards from each machine.
Oh, that's just dandy. Daryl, thanks for your call this morning. Here again, the powers are playing chess, the grassroots are playing checkers, aren't they? I mean, the voting machines themselves are sound, but the way they harvest the data, not so sound, apparently. By the way, Jeff Greenspan, a friend, is responsible for getting us in touch with the Congressman Ron Paul's staff people. I want to say thanks to Jeff this morning, and good morning as well, Jeff down in Phoenix. Let's talk to Joe, see what's going on over here in Salt Lake City. Joe.
Hi, you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're fine.
I actually had a question for the congressman, but I will just throw it out. I heard about an interview recently. One of the main issues that I use to decide how to vote is the right to life issue. I agree with Ron Paul about almost everything, and I know he says he is pro-life. I agree with him about Iraq and all of that. The question I had is, on the interview, I heard him say it should be left up to the states. Yet I know he voted for the federal partial birth abortion ban. So I was hoping, if he's listening, perhaps to bring his position. The candidate I voted for in 2004 for president. legal abortion in America. Mm-hmm. And that's really what I'm looking for as a candidate.
Well, that's kind of that's the fracture line between the Constitution Party folks and the more libertarian-oriented folks. And, you know, Ron Paul has roots in the libertarian ethos or concept, though he's working under the Republican rubric right now, as far as I know. But that's one of the big ideological fault lines that helps separate, divide, and ultimately conquer the freedom movement, is this idea that the Constitution, more Constitution Party type of people want to harness more of the coercive powers of government to inhibit people from getting abortions, while maybe a libertarian type thinker would say, you know, abortion is abominable, but if we allow the government to stick its nose under the tent sufficiently to find out if abortions are taking place and then do something about it, it's going to use those powers we've granted to do all kinds of other things, like come and take your children away without a warrant or any due process, as in,
right,
you know, child protective
services. Except for the fact that Congressman Paul certainly supports the power of the state level, the power of government to prevent murder. I mean, that's the way he and I look at it. You know, this is a murder, and it should be no different for somebody who's, you know, a few seconds old than somebody who is, you know, 3 years post-born versus pre-born.
Yeah, there is an issue there, you know, of the federal government's responsibility to guarantee civil rights. So we're coming right up to our break. Joe, thanks to you. I think you're a new caller, and I appreciate your participation this morning. By the way, thanks to Daryl for coming in and his very competent assistance, including technical assistance in here. It's really valuable. One of the loyal unsung heroes of K-Talk, helpers of Jack Stockwell in this case. If you want to get a hold of a really easy resource to look at Ron Paul's speeches in front of I don't want to use too colorful language here this early in the morning. I keep thinking of references to municipal waste whenever I think of waste treatment plants and things like that when I think of our Congress. But anyway, he does give these talks, these little speeches, just to snap their heels together and give context to how nefarious and corrupt most of the goings-on are. They're not very long. They're very punchy, a lot like that maybe too long quote that I started out our morning with here this morning. But you can go to www.house.gov/Paul, and there they are, sitting right there, and they're just great to hear. Okay, we've got another, finish the work on my cement overshoes here as far as my radio activities are concerned. We'll talk a little bit about Vice President Cheney, and we've heard a lot of apology on various radio outlets about the fact that, you know, it's the Vice President of the United States after all. Nothing wrong with having him in town and doing a little speech down in the university, my alma mater of BYU. Funny thing, though, there are a few academics down there that seem to respond to this prospect a little bit like I do. That would be Kirk Reardon from the Department of Health Science, Ralph Brown, Department of Sociology, Mary Cornwall, Department of Sociology, and Tim Heaton, Department of Sociology. These folks wrote a little letter. And I'll tell you what, it's so nice to read flawless English. I'm going to read it to you. And I want your response, if any, to this. See if you think we're astray in this, because I'm going to give my endorsement to what they're saying. We are deeply disturbed. BYU has invited Vice President Dick Cheney to speak at spring commencement. Invited commencement speakers should exemplify all that is, quote, virtuous, lovely, or of good report, unquote. In our estimation, Vice President Cheney does not demonstrate these qualities. From all indications, Cheney is responsible for the manipulation of intelligence used as a pretext for declaring war on Iraq, the abuse of prisoners at Guantanamo Bay, and domestic wiretapping. That's keeping it pretty simple, isn't it? That's my comment. There is every reason to question Cheney's ethics, including the conviction of his former chief of staff, Scooter Libby, Halliburton's financial gain from bloodshed, and many other scandals. Using a national cross-sectional sampling strategy, scholars now estimate 650,000 Iraqis have died unnecessarily as a consequence of the war. In fact, the Book of Mormon demonstrates the opposite. God rebukes nations that attack other nations without just cause. We feel Vice President Cheney does not embody the ideals taught by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints nor Brigham Young University, and inviting Cheney to address students at graduation violates longstanding church and BYU policies regarding political neutrality and sanctions the actions of a prominent political figure, that demonstrates questionable ethics. We should not honor such an individual. We call upon BYU's administration to retract its invitation to the vice president. It would be far more appropriate to have a general authority address students. We are not against Vice President Cheney coming to campus, but feel the best venue would be a university-wide forum where prominent individuals from all parties have an open exchange of ideas about future directions for our country, not commencement. We ask our concerned faculty and students to, 1, urge the same, 2, write editorials to local and state newspapers, and 3, identify additional ways of peacefully protesting Dick Cheney's visit. I've got to say, you know, coming from the culture that these, I think, you know, I can say with some confidence that there would be a lot of common underpinnings to the way that I came up in life and my cultural training that you know would be common with these folks. Things have got to get pretty darn unacceptable, pretty starkly corrupt and flawed in the conduct with respect to the conduct of a public official before people like these folks, if I could take the liberty to characterize them like that, before these folks would have stood up like this and possibly jeopardized their own standing among their peers down there. It is. It's a very stark, unambiguous situation where these folks, and I think when I think about the Iraq War and the suffering of our boys over there over these last 4 years and the inestimable suffering of the civilian population over there, the face and name of Dick Cheney come into my mind more so than President Bush. I'm sure that these scholars that wrote this letter, they could have gotten really windy and talked about all kinds of other detail, but you know, it takes away from the impact of the letter itself, doesn't it? But how about, you know, if we're going to really talk about it, the administration, the cabal that the administration is a spearhead of, this neocon thing. You know, they were trying to get their job done, the work done, of starting the war based on CIA intelligence. You know, the massive apparatus we have to collect data. You know, there's still some patriotic Americans in the CIA, apparently, because they couldn't get it done with the CIA. And when they decided to create their own intelligence organ that would manufacture the right answers about the lethal threat posed to the West by the state of Iraq, that's exactly what they did, isn't it? They went ahead and created their own little yes factory, their own little intelligence. Well, they even had a name for it, but it was under the rubric of the office of Vice President Dick Cheney that this was done. Grease the skids. It was sort of a you know, fly-by-night CIA. Do-it-yourself CIA, wasn't it? Wish I could remember the name of that. And then, of course, you know, they could have thrown in this wonderful speech. You can find it on the Internet with ease, where Dick Cheney is addressing some constituents, some kind of a high-dollar political meeting, dinner party type of thing. And he jokes about the fact that, you know, he probably would never have gotten elected to Congress back in Montana, or Wyoming, rather, had he ever revealed that he held the chairmanship of the CFR, the Council on Foreign Relations. So this is what we've come to as conservatives, supposedly as, you know, I used to be a Republican, but this is what the Republican Party has come to, is the head of their party, or second in command, was also the head of the CFR. And yet, people in this state, it seems like such a leap, and it seems like such an untoward, such a breach of etiquette, to say anything like, I don't want to see him. I don't want him around here. You know, really makes you think that, gosh, Utah would have been better being a country of its own, wouldn't it? In a lot of ways. I guess that's an un-American sentiment, too. But sometimes I think, boy, the state of Deseret, that wasn't such a bad idea when you see the way this the rest of this outfit is going now. All right, we're right back at you now. Let's go to who's been lingering the longest. It looks like James. Hi, James. How are you?
Hi. This is James Flynn with Utah Rally for Peace. Thanks a lot, Dale Williams. I'm really glad you're on the radio again.
Well, thank you.
And you were just talking about Cheney coming to town, and I wanted to let people know that there are protests being planned. If he still comes, you know, there's still some hope maybe that the church will change their mind this weekend, but I know that the Deseret News had an article saying it was a done deal. So, there's going to be protests being held in Provo on April 26th, and there's also going to be a protest here that I'm running at Washington Square here in Salt Lake City. We're going to be there from 1 to 8 p.m. Reserved in the park. The main program is going to be from 5 to 7 p.m., and we're going to have we're hoping that we can get live TV coverage on the local news, and we're also going to have a pre-program from 3 to 5 for the people that want to come early.
Okay, James, we appreciate your calling in. We're going to try to scap up one other person here before we do our top of the hour break. Let's talk to, looks like Dave. Hi, Dave.
Thank you for taking my call, Dale. Our Vice President Cheney had a meeting with Judith Miller of the New York Times. He told her to print an article stating that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, but he told her not to list the source. So she prints this article, right, and she has this news article stating that an unnamed CIA source says that there are weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Then he took that newspaper article and ran around the country giving speeches saying, look here, we have weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. He created his own phony intelligence to start a war in Iraq, and got a lot of innocent Americans and Iraqis killed. And I want to know if you could speak to that, and I'll listen to your conversation off air.
Well, thanks, Dave. I've spent my life, I have an avocation, a hobby, which is, you've probably seen the movie Follow Me or Follow Me Boys with Fred McMurray, the guy who never quite got to law school but studied law his whole life. I was always interested in being a defense analyst to study that that field. And so I've spent my life reading and studying in the area of military history and strategic studies and security studies and all that sort of thing. And it has given me a love for the people in the military and a sense, having, even though I've never been a part of the military, a sense of the true, well, you know, romantics that they are. This sense of romantic in the sense of knight errantry, of being people of high virtue. Many, many of these folks in the enlisted ranks and in the officer corps. The idea that they want to fulfill in their generation the task that in all generations of European folks, people derived from European stock, that the young men go down and sacrifice themselves willingly for the furtherance and the continuance of the people. And so, you know, I watch movies like as well, like probably you do. Like last night I was watching a little of Black Hawk Down, which kind of gives a suggestion of what infantry combat is like. Nothing near as bad as it really is, no doubt, but gives you a little suggestion as a viewer of what the kids are going through over there. And the bottom line with me, I don't know about Judith Miller. I know she was, she's of the persuasion that would probably manipulate information for the benefit of Israel. That's why this war was fought in any case. But the overarching sin of people like Mr. Cheney and the rest of them is that, for me, is that they take this virtue that reposes in our youth and in the middle-aged folks who are in the officer corps and what have you, and it wastes it disdainfully uses it like, well, what did Henry Kissinger say about military men? That they're like animals, that they're stupid and all the rest of it. That was an unguarded moment, wasn't it? That was a moment of a real frankness and honesty. And sometimes these globalists have those moments. They can't help but flaunt from time to time. It's one of their only weaknesses in this whole situation that we're facing as grassroots folks. One of the only weaknesses that the cabal exhibits is the tendency to flaunt their power and shove it in our face once in a while. We saw Nick Rockefeller, others doing that. Well, the old man, David Rockefeller, in his biography, or not a biography, I don't think necessary, somewhat of an autobiography, I suppose, talking about the fact that, yeah, they're globalists. And thank God for the press cooperation, or they would never have been able to get where they are today, the silence. It isn't really cooperation. It's the act of a good paid hireling, isn't it, our press? So if we ever get ourselves out of this, Dave, Arkansas Dave, if we ever get ourselves out of this, it's going to be because we re-embraced nationalism. We re-embraced the values of our Constitution, which dictates federalism, the sovereignty of the states to decide their own destiny and all that stuff. But yeah, I think of Dick Cheney when I think of the tens of thousands of devastated lives of the survivors from our military incursion in Iraq.
Stockwell on K-Talk.